I think making sure that you really touch home to what is important to you and create a clear vision of what you want to achieve based around those values and what is important for you in your life. Once you have that vision, you need to create a plan. So we don't decide to drive from Emerald to Sydney and not know how we're going to get there, where we're going to stop for fuel, what we're going to do if we maybe blow a tire. So really important that you know where you're going, but also some of the steps and the building blocks along the way to get there. Hi, I'm Jessica Burry from Emerald Plaza Pharmacy in Emerald, Queensland, and you're listening to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
Welcome to the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast, brought to you by the Pharmacy Guild of Australia. Focusing on pharmacy management and ownership, the PBCN podcast supports the improvement and growth of your business performance with insights and advice from a range of industry professionals. The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way.
Emerald is a small town in the Central Highlands region of Queensland, approximately 870 kilometres from Brisbane. Emerald is a service town for a large number of industries, including extensive coal mining operations and cotton farming. Emerald is also home to an outstanding community pharmacy. Emerald Plaza Pharmacy was awarded finalist status in this year's Guild Pharmacy of the Year Award, which is proudly sponsored by principal sponsor Care Pharmaceuticals and sponsor QCPP. And owner Jessica Burry has a vision to create a health hub to service the community and collaborate with the wider health sector. Jess and her team understand the challenges facing the industry and embrace the need to adapt and change to address the needs of their patients and the community. The willingness to adapt and change has resulted in a dynamic, viable, and sustainable business. And today, we speak with Jess about her journey to ownership, how she and her team have transformed the pharmacy, and what they have planned for the future. Jess, welcome to the show. Emerald's about 270 kilometres west of Rockhampton in Queensland. Tell us, what is the journey someone goes on to move to Emerald and end up owning three pharmacies in the one town?
Well, hi, Daniel. Interestingly, I guess I'm actually a coastal girl. So I'm originally from Byron Bay. And after doing uni, I spent a couple of years working in Mount Isa. I decided to kick up my heels. I went travelling overseas and I came home with no money, no job, and ultimately just took a position in Emerald because I had been out here previously. Emerald for me was really the place that I was coming until I figured out where I wanted to live and what I wanted to do with my life. Not uncommonly, as you hear a lot of stories around town, that I'm still here 10 years later and I absolutely love it. So the town really stole my heart.
And I think we will come back to learn more about what you love about Emerald later on in the show. But as I mentioned just then, you own three of the pharmacies in the town where there is a total of four pharmacies. What's been the journey since you arrived or the focus that led you to the pharmacies being a finalist in the Guild Pharmacy of the Year?
Probably about 5 or 6 years ago, decided that I wanted to get into pharmacy ownership, and I'm pretty driven and business focused person. I've always, since I registered, been managing pharmacies and really love the reporting side of things, the dynamics of a team, and how that can create a really thriving business. For me, probably the changing point after I purchased the businesses was reading the Simon Sinek book, Start With Why, and that kind of was a light bulb moment that made me be able to really pinpoint what was important to me and why I actually wanted to be in pharmacy ownership. I've always really loved my community and healthcare, and I really value mentoring and educating people. And so the ability to be able to combine those things that were really important to me with the business background and the grounding that I had had just kind of made everything fall into place in a great way. And so for me, having a really like patient-focused services, but making sure that they're backed by sound business methods is important. And then, again, sort of really getting that right product mix, engaging the team and getting that commitment to the community. And it really was like all the puzzle pieces just kind of have fitted together. And so we've been lucky enough to be on this journey and really enjoying where we're heading.
So you speak about puzzle pieces, and a puzzle has to start with that first piece somewhere, whether it's a corner or a straight edge. And your pharmacy has been on a significant transformational journey since you purchased it back in 2016. If you think back to then and reading the book and the start with why, you would have had lots of ideas and opportunities, and you would have been really excited about the future and what you could achieve. How do you know which is that first puzzle piece, which is that first step to set you on that journey?
Yes, I was extremely excited. I don't know if you've gathered from talking to me, but I'm a pretty excitable person. I'm also, really just jump in the deep end, get things done. And I actually, when I purchased the pharmacies, was pregnant and settled on the purchase a month before I gave birth to my second child. And in hindsight, I think while that was maybe a little bit crazy and people ask me why did I decide to do it then, probably was actually really beneficial for me because I was forced to slow down and to think about things. So I was limited with what I could actually implement with a newborn baby. And so I actually just got the opportunity to sort of step back, observe what was happening, evaluate how things were going, talk to the team and see what they were doing, and create a little bit of a structure instead of just going in like I normally was used to, a bit guns blazing and conquer the world sort of attitude. And so I think that has been a really great learning experience for me to I like to refer to it as putting a lid on my saucepan. So just taking that step back off the throttle and looking at what the best ideas to implement are rather than just trying to do everything all at once.
A little birdie told me that you do some ultra running. Is that a great time and place to put a lid on your saucepan without any of the distractions and just spend some time thinking not just about your business but just life in general?
Certainly. You really get to know yourself very well doing ultra marathons. So you go through very high highs and very, very low lows. It really is a great way to just kind of connect to yourself, but also to connect to other quite inspiring and motivated people. And yes, while we all may be a little bit crazy, ultra running is a really lovely community environment. They really kind of bring everybody along and it gives you that opportunity to just kind of talk to people without any expectations of who you are or what you are and to grab some other ideas.
Excellent. Now, change is always something that takes time and persistence from not just the leader but the team itself, and it requires a great team culture to actually realise change. As a new owner, how did you engage the existing team in the need for change and then prepare and even support them through the journey? And, of course, keep up your own energy levels through all of this, particularly with a baby.
I was pretty fortunate in that the businesses that I purchased, I had previously worked in. So I'd worked in them before I had my first child. I'd moved and worked in another pharmacy in town that I am a partner in, and then the opportunity came up to get back to my old stomping ground. So I think while the team wasn't exactly the same as what it was when I was previously working in it, I had those connections already, so I knew some of the skills of the team that I was taking on. I really believe in creating a really collaborative and nurturing environment and a place where the team is given the opportunity to grow and give their input. And everybody would like to say they know better than everybody else and who doesn't like to pop up their own test every now and then. But really, my team has far more valuable contributions to things than I do, and their ideas are amazing. And so I think it's really important to just create an environment where people feel comfortable and supported, that they can express those ideas, that they can identify what is important to them and their passions, and to be able to see how they can fit into the vision of the business and to create a pathway for them to change. And then it becomes really exciting and fulfilling, I think, for the whole team, rather than it being my little bee in my bonnet of things that I want to do and then just come on, get on for the ride, or you're not coming. So I think, that team engagement and the environment that you work in In an energetic sense, just helps you to kind of maintain your energy levels. So, you know, if you're doing it all on your own and you haven't got them with you, then yeah, your energy's zapped. But I'm pretty lucky that my team is amazing and really supports, you know, what we are trying to do.
You alluded to it, but one of the key items you are really passionate about is supporting pharmacists to use their skills to their full capacity. And that has meant that you have redesigned workflows and delegation between pharmacists and pharmacy assistants. How do you attack a job like that? And I'm particularly interested in how you managed individual responses to those changes.
I think it's really important to note that, you know, we go through this process. We've been Pharmacy of the Year finalists, and the spotlight is on all the things that we've done well, but there's plenty of things that haven't gone to plan and haven't gone well. And, you know, I think as a team, we probably are really in the very early stages of this trajectory that we're on. I think importantly, and probably, you know, again, back to my light bulb moment with that start with why, is having a clear vision and then communicating that vision to the team so they knew where I was coming from, where I could see us going. And there were ways, I guess, that we could kind of diversify on that vision, but making sure that the team could come along in the journey, and making sure that there was plenty of feedback and reevaluation and changes happening along the way, because it doesn't always go to plan and the things you think are going to be great just don't sort of always happen. And I think giving different members of the team the space to change in their own time was important as well. So we're not all the same personalities. Not everybody's going to be on the same thought process as I am and ready to do it. But if you create an environment where they have the ability to kind of change somewhat at their own pace, it makes it a lot easier.
Throughout that change, there would have been some key lessons that you learned along the way, no doubt, like anybody does when they go through these transformational journeys. But was there anything in particular that you feel that maybe you misjudged? Maybe you thought it would be relatively easy to achieve X, but it ended up being much harder, or maybe even vice versa?
I just spoke about the team and making sure that they were coming along on the journey. And that probably was the biggest lesson for me, because I am a guns blazing, conquer the world kind of person. It was a lesson in me, and I lost some good people on the way because I wasn't allowing enough flexibility. So, you know, I had to pretty quickly come to the realization that I needed to create an environment where they could change and be guided in that change, and to be given sometimes a little bit of extra time and than what I maybe had previously been willing to. So, you know, learning some of the patience, maybe some of that comes from being a parent as well. And I think as well, just that continual reevaluation, just because we think something is important to us or the service that we're going to roll out is, you know, really important to what we think the community needs, it's not necessarily always important for our patients. So I think you're making sure you're doing the right research, you're not rushing into just rolling out a service because you think it's amazing, but taking the time to actually establish whether people are going to use the service that you do, because you can waste a lot of time and money into investing in these things that just aren't actually going to be taken up if it doesn't fit the people that you're delivering the service to.
I'm going to come back to that point a little bit later, because it's something that I'm really interested in hearing about. Something every business owner is keen to hear about is the metrics. We go on these transformational journeys for a reason. We set ourselves goals and we should measure against those. But those metrics and the impact that they have on your bottom line, how have you measured your success and achievement since taking over and going on this journey?
I just want to start by saying that we're really only 2.5 years into this change. And while that seems like a long time, It's not really. We've packed a lot in, but we're probably only now starting to see some of those financial benefits. So I did doubt along the way whether sometimes this was the right decision to make. And I think you know, part of the financial benefits that we're starting to see is, you know, yes, monitoring what the revenue we're getting from the services is, but our patients are starting to become more engaged. They're coming into the pharmacy. They're taking the time to have discussions with us and actually take on board what we're saying. So, you know, we see that extra uptake of increased script numbers, increased basket size, because they're actually, we've slowed down to talk to them, so they've slowed down to listen. I mentioned before, you know, it is really essential, and we talk a lot around creating professional service focused pharmacies, you know, driving to the CP 2025 growth areas. But what has to be the foundation is good business basics. And I really see these growth areas as an extension of what we're already doing and building on what community pharmacy has been in the past, rather than there being a completely standalone operation. So making sure that you've got really robust reporting and tracking systems in place, I think, is essential, but then also knowing how to apply them in a meaningful way so that you can continue to make improvements and adjustments in the operation of the business to continue in an economically viable way. So there has to be economies of scale in everything. You need to be able to pay your wages and your rent at the end of the day, and hopefully, you know, you create a difference in your patients and take a little bit of money home at the end of the day.
You spoke about doubts. When you have had those doubts, are they something that you're inclined to just deal with yourself internally and just push on and see where it goes? Or is it a case of the team sort of swings into action and helps keep you on the straight and narrow and lift you up, so to speak?
I think I do take on a lot on my own, but I also am very lucky to have great people around me. So not only within my team, but within my pharmacy network. So I'm a part of Direct Chemist Outlet Pharmacy Group. So really connecting with other people that are doing different things. I've created some great alliances with other pharmacy, previous pharmacy of the year finalists, and I think just having the confidence to have the conversations with people and admit that you're not sure about what's going on, and just gathering information and trying to sort of establish how things sort of sit. Certainly, you know, there's been many a times where I've sat down with our team and said, are we on the right path? And we haven't always been. So I think it's also about being brave enough to admit when you're wrong and to make the changes if you need to.
It's a great point. Now, you have some fantastic community links and are recognised facilitators of the My Health for Life program. Can you tell us a little bit about that program and how you built and maintained the relationships in it?
The program is amazing. When the opportunity came out from My Health for Life to become a facilitator, it was something that I sort of just clung on to. It really fit with what we were trying to achieve in the preventative health space within the pharmacy. So the program itself is funded through Queensland Government, administered through Diabetes Queensland in collaboration with the Heart and the Stroke Foundations. So we're now into our fifth cohort of participants coming through the program. And what it's about is really sort of creating the space to identify patients that are at risk of developing diabetes and other lifestyle diseases. So I call it the old Know Your Numbers program on steroids. So we do all the screening. We say, yes, you've got this risk of going on to develop diabetes. And rather than leaving it at there, which is what we used to do, we can say, but you actually have qualified to participate in this program. So the program itself is really patient-centred. So it's all about what they want to change in their lifestyle, not about me telling them you've got to lose X amount of kilos or you've got to run every day. And I think that's what the sweet spot is with it, that people can make some really significant changes to their overall health by making tiny changes in their lifestyle, and this program sort of gives them the space to do that. So the actual program runs over 6 months and it involves sort of six consultations. One of them is one-on-one, and then the rest is all group-based. And in those sessions, we talk about different aspects of what a healthy lifestyle looks at, but we also talk about how to implement and maintain behaviour change. And that's the key point. It's not, you know, it's about making sure people have that knowledge, and there's varying degrees of that health knowledge across the participants we have, but it's about showing them how they can implement it and then maintain it when they don't have that group necessarily holding them their hand every week. So we've had some really great results with our team, and we're actually working to roll the program out to some local businesses in the coming year. So can't be happier with how it's going.
Excellent. In a recent article, you said that the pharmacy profession has come a long way in the delivery of professional services, but you also mentioned that many in the profession still feel uncomfortable in a fee-for-service model. Can you tell us how you decide on what services you're going to provide to your patients in your pharmacy, and how you have been able to implement a fee-for-service approach?
We initially kind of use the PHN identified sort of health focus areas in our region as a bit of a guide of where there may be services sort of lacking in the area, and identifying some of those gaps. We have a great collaboration between other health professionals and GPs in the town, and I think being a rural pharmacy, we have a little bit of an advantage in this space, in that your next door neighbour might be the local physio or doctor, so it's quite easy to kind of create those relationships, and then also that connection with our patients, so just trying to find out what they want. So the evaluation and identification before anything is rolled out is really important, to make sure everybody is sort of feeding back into what they think the community needs. And I think really important in terms of that, you know, I mentioned the collaboration and the relationship building with the other health professionals in town, is that we really try and identify services, or even sometimes parts of a service, that are unique and not duplicating what's already happening in our community. So there's no point in me doing what the person next door is doing, regardless of whether they're a pharmacist or a doctor or a dietitian. If we all work together, we can really cater for our community a lot better by creating some specialised services. I also really tap into what my team is interested in. So we first sort of identify what the gaps are, but then try and see if there's someone that has a particular interest in some of those areas and how that they would like to develop those interests. So, for example, I have two pharmacists at the moment that have taken an interest in diabetes education. So they've just enrolled to undertake the course. So within 18 months, we'll be able to offer diabetic education through our services. I think the key in terms of you mentioned about fee-for-service is for us to not underestimate our skills as pharmacists and what people are willing to pay for our services. So we need to educate our patients around the value of what we are bringing to the table, about the benefits of the services that we provide, and creating an environment where it's not expected that what we do is for free all the time. And that's a whole industry change. It's not something you can change overnight. But we need to value ourselves first. And until we can value ourselves and our time first, we can't expect anybody else to be doing that for us.
So how has the community up there reacted to those offerings, and are they willing to pay for them?
People definitely are willing to pay for the services that we're providing, and our community is valuing the benefits that they're receiving as a result of the service. And I think the evidence is that, is not just in the fact that when it comes to the crunch and we ask them for the X amount of dollars for the service that we're providing, it's that they continue to come back and they're asking us about other services that we're doing, or for other appointments, so that they can discuss things further. I think it's really important as part of the process that we don't view our services as individual increments to our business, that it's really a holistic service. So when someone comes in and we're giving them a vaccination, we're talking to them about their health in general and including in that discussion some information about the other services that we provide and how we can link into them. I do think it's important, and coming from a pharmacy group that is very metro-based and I'm the rural cousin, I do need to mention that I am in a higher demographic rural area. So I do have an advantage in the uptake of fee-for-service, I believe, but I don't think that it necessarily excludes metro pharmacies from being able to ask for fee-for-service. I think it just needs to be done in an environment where the values are given to the patients. I always liken it to, you don't judge the millionaire who walks into the Ferrari dealership in thongs and shorts. We shouldn't assume what our patients can afford. We should tell them what we're worth and then let them make the decision for themselves.
As a marketer, I would 100% agree with that. You're also a strong advocate and believer in mentoring, and has a young pharmacist who owns four pharmacies. So you have the three there in Emerald and another one in Victoria. You're a professional representative on several committees, and you're heavily involved in the profession. Could you tell us about the impact a good mentor can have on your career and some insights in how you have incorporated mentoring within your own business?
I really believe that having a mentor, and maybe not just one mentor, but multiple mentors, is really essential in career progression. So really important to just align yourself with the right people and people that have similar values to you, so that they can help you to reach your potential. I've been really fortunate over the years to have had a number of mentors, and they've really helped to shape me as a pharmacist and as a business owner. I have actively sought mentors that will help me to grow. So I've sought people that have similar skills to me. I've sought people that have very different skills to me, and that's enabled me to kind of broaden my horizons. Mentoring is really a key value of mine personally, and so I implement that as a focus in our business. So right from our junior pharmacy assistants to pharmacists, there is some form of mentoring depending on what they're trying to achieve. Particularly for our interns and our pharmacists, I think it's important that they're given mentoring across all aspects of pharmacy, so right from frontline services to the management. And I say to my team, at the end of your internship, you need to be able to step into a position of management. Whether you're doing that or not, that's my job, is to get you there. I think it's important that while we might not be all undertaking all of these roles, and we might be going and specialising in a particular area, that if you're going to work in a team environment in a community pharmacy, as a pharmacist, you need to have an understanding of what the rest of the team is doing around you, so that we can work together and how you can support them. If you don't understand their role and how they're doing it, how do you create that environment where you can be on the same page? So I think that that understanding just creates a far more communicative and connected team, and that we kind of all mostly heading on the same trajectory together if we all know what each other are trying to achieve at the end of the day.
We heard about it at the start, and I said I would come back to what is attractive about working in a rural setting, because you are an advocate for working in rural pharmacies. Let's say someone is listening and they may be considering working in a rural location. Can you tell them what it is that is attractive about living and working rurally?
I do want to say, I'd mentioned that I'd been to Mount Isa as a pharmacist. What I haven't mentioned is that I actually did work in Brisbane for some time as well. So I haven't always been a rural pharmacist, but I quickly realised that metro pharmacy wasn't for me, and I really love rural pharmacy and find it so rewarding. So I have seen both sides of the scale. I think rurally, you're really able to create substantial and sustaining relationships with your patients, and you can make a real difference to people's lives. You know, I think we're actually at an advantage being a rural pharmacist in being able to practice in a full scope role, because the gaps in services are higher. It's easier to fill those gaps. So the opportunities are greater. In my opinion, the job fulfillment and satisfaction is far greater. And the lifestyle's awesome. I can, you know, pop in the car and I'm here 5 minutes later. I was having some good discussions with people about how, you know, how do you fit everything in your day? Well, I don't lose 2 hours of my day commuting. I'm here 5 minutes later. So I think really as a community pharmacist in a rural setting, you become that health hub and a player in the healthcare team. So the collaboration between other health professionals is higher. And for the most part, you know, I think we really are trying to get to that stage where we're all working together. It doesn't always pull off, but I think other people know the gaps in the setting that we have out here, and so we all are there as health professionals to help each other out and get the best for our community, and that's what I love about it.
Jess, as we've discussed, it's only 2 years or so in. Your change journey has been truly transformational in that short period of time, and it has positively impacted every part of your business. For our listeners that are thinking about starting the same journey themselves, or for those who are maybe they're just in the early stages of that journey, what would be a key piece of advice you'd offer them?
From many years of kind of wandering around aimlessly, not sure what I was going to do, I think making sure that you really touch home to what is important to you and create a clear vision of what you want to achieve based around those values and what is important for you in your life. Once you have that vision, you need to create a plan. So, you know, we don't decide to drive from Emerald to Sydney and not know how we're going to get there, where we're going to stop for fuel, what we're going to do if we maybe blow a tire. So really important that you know where you're going, but also, you know, some of the steps and the building blocks along the way to get there. I think it's really important to research what you're going to implement and make every decision count towards improving your business and its bottom line, because without a viable business, you can't be there for your patients. So you need to make sure that you're creating a sense of health and well-being for your patient. But you've got to be able to keep the doors open at the end of the day, and that's really important as well.
Some great advice and insights there. Jess Burry from Emerald Plaza Pharmacy in Emerald, Queensland. Thank you so much for sharing your insights into your pharmacy's change and transformation journey.
Thanks so much for having me, Daniel.
Thanks again to Jess for finding some time in her busy schedule for us. I think you'll all agree that Jess and the team at Emerald Plaza Pharmacy are strongly committed to engaging with the community and dedicated to improving the delivery of professional services to their patients. Jess's desire and drive to establish a community health hub is evident in the considered refit of the store and the engagement of allied health professionals in the community. Now, the Guild recognises the need for community pharmacies to embrace change to ensure long-term sustainability. The Guild's CP 2025 Framework for Change publication outlines 9 growth pathways to help inform future business strategies, one of which is community health hubs. So if you would like more information about the framework and the 9 growth pathways, visit www.guild.org.au/CP2025. And if you're interested in applying for the 2020 Guild Pharmacy of the Year Award, proudly sponsored by principal sponsor Care Pharmaceuticals and sponsor QCPP, you can find further information at www.guild.org.au/news-events/guild-awards/pharmacy-of-the-year. Until next time, I'm Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to Episode 17 of the Pharmacy Business and Career Network podcast.
The PBCN podcast, supporting your journey every step of the way. For more resources, to access support or advice, or to view this episode's show notes, visit guild.org.au.